In studio for this hour, we got Rick Bretta, the gadget guy. How you doing, Rick?
I'm great. I didn't know I was going to have to follow someone like that, though. This is tough.
What an act.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, you write for CNET. When we first talked to you, it's a 2-3 years ago now, and first had you on, it was maybe only 6 or 7 different, you know, well-known computer magazines. Now it's just about every one, I think. They're all picking you up.
Including Time Magazine.
I'm everywhere.
Including Time Magazine. That's right.
Absolutely. Time.com, you know. It's not quite the magazine.
It's better than the magazine because people read it.
Yeah, exactly. You're right.
Probably more people reading what's in there.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Rick, what is your main outlet, though, for your articles? Is it CNET?
I think the lion's share of what I'm doing now is for CNET.
But you also do. We kid about your being cheap enough when you squeeze a nickel, the buffalo moves.
Yeah, the cheapskate blog is what he used.
Right. So because cheap, I won't even tip my hat.
There you go. Because you do a number of those things for savings.com, right?
Yes, a little bit for savings.com. I write for Wired a little bit here and there. For Time now is kind of a new gig. So, you know, I'm doing a little bit of this.
I think we've seen you on PC Mag and some others. So.
But your focus has been in particular on helping people to save money when they buy things.
That's definitely my passion, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's your passion.
And buy really cool things. And that's what we're talking to them about, which is all the new stuff that you know, came out, was at least introduced at CES, Consumer Electronics Show.
You didn't go, did you?
I didn't go this year. In fact, Cal was just asking me, or noting that it seemed like a lot of journalists took a pass this year, which I did. And, you know,
and it was the biggest one. So somebody filled in your spot. Somebody sat in your seat. Yeah.
You know, I think what has happened in the last couple of years is that people went to CES and they came back feeling like it was kind of flat. Like there just wasn't really anything super exciting.
Right.
Kind of more of the same. You know, sure, we're seeing some 3D
TVs,
printers.
Like, oh, it's curved now.
Okay, TV. Oh, yeah, right. Big deal. So, and I wasn't really that excited myself to go this year, and I'm really kicking myself now because I feel like I missed out on some really cool stuff. We're going to talk about some of it.
Yeah, we're going to talk. What things in particular did you feel like?
Well, the Oculus Rift, I think, is the thing I have been wanting to see for the longest time.
Literally.
And so my colleague, Dave Johnson, who's been on the show before.
Oh, from eHow.
From eHow. He went to the show. He was very sad that I wasn't there to keep him entertained. And he got a chance to demo the Oculus Rift. And what he wrote about it on Facebook was that he said it was the most game-changing thing he's ever seen.
Now, like Oculus Rift is what, a 3D set of glasses?
Yes, thank you. It's a virtual reality headset.
Right.
Just an order of magnitude better than anything that's been done up till now. It was purchased last year by Facebook, just kind of out of the blue for like $2 billion.
Right, right.
And the development, you know, between last year's model and this year's model, just in that time period alone, apparently has been amazing. CNET's Scott Stein wrote something about it. And absolutely was mesmerized by the experience.
Right.
And I think we are just about at that tipping point now where all of a sudden virtual reality is going to go from being this novelty thing that really never worked too well to, oh my goodness, we're looking at something major here.
You know, I talked to a couple friends this last week and as this was coming out, and they were saying, well, we did a lot of that at the EDS Virtual Reality Lab. And I said, yeah, how much did that cost? He said, well, initially it only cost us $2 million to build. But and I'm going, yeah, and now they're selling it individually to all of us so we can afford.
So which brings up the magic question, what is this thing selling for? Or is this going to be another $1,500 boondoggle like Google Glass?
Like Google Glass. So
I'm not sure that's a boondoggle. I know people think that it is, but there's a lot of people starting to figure out how to use it in the enterprise. So we'll see. Not this version, but I think the next version.
So with Oculus, with the cost.
But anyway.
So Oculus Rift is still not on sale to the general public.
Right.
And I don't think that they have actually landed on what the price point is going to be. I think that what they're hoping to do is get it to the point where it's, you know, a couple hundred dollars, $300-$400, which would be pretty amazing.
And I think it was the proof of performance this year that was there to sell people.
Right.
From then, now we're going to see how it's going to be applied. Rick Bretta, our gadget guy, and we're going to be talking about the Oculus Rift and some of the other things that came out of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, as we continue with the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you very much also to Eric Dorsch and to Rich Lisinski, who are working behind the glass, helping us with our program. By the way, coming up the second hour, Eric is going to get a workout, because this actually, the next hour, our third hour, we're going to have open lines at 800-859-0957. And you'll be able to, just before the end of this hour, you can start calling and lining up with your questions about maybe a gift that you got over the holidays you have a question about.
That's right. He's giving us a thumbs up. He's ready for the challenge.
He is ready for the challenge. All right. Speaking of the challenge, Rick Broido is with us, our gadget guy. And the challenge, when you look at CES, which has just finished, is kind of to figure out what to talk about, because there's so much that went on there. The one area that I thought that really caught my eye, it got the award as the best of CES. Mm-hmm. This is from the people who were at CES. It was called Sling TV. Tell us about that.
Yes. Nice. So Sling TV, not to be confused with the Sling Box, even though it's from the same company, yep. Completely different division, I guess I'd say, is a service that will deliver to you live TV by way of your Roku box, your tablet, your phone, your Amazon Fire TV stick, any of those types of devices, a whole range of channels for $20 a month. And this is really kind of a surprise, kind of a revolutionary bundling of channels that you really couldn't get before outside of your cable company.
This is kind of like the a la carte we were talking about before.
You know, I get to pick my channel. That's neat.
That brings up a weird question, because now I'm trying to figure out, why is it that Sling TV is going to be able to work, but Aereo couldn't?
Right. So Aereo was the antenna-based service that was just giving you network programming. So ABC, NBC, and those guys. And I think, again, they were probably a little ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they got litigated out of business. But this is, you know, what these guys are bringing. Sling is going to bring you a couple of ESPN channels, Disney Channel, ABC Family. So Food Network, HGTV, cable channels, not the regular old fuddy-duddy networks.
Over-the-air stuff. Right.
Right, exactly. So I guess
TBS,
they were able to work
TNT,
that out.
TNT, Cartoon Network,
right.
Disney Channel.
Disney Channel.
And all that for $20. Now, I understand.
Now, you have to be invited. Right now, you have to be invited.
Sure.
So what you have to do is you have to put your email in and hit the button that says get invited, and they invite you, right?
And by the way, we've got a link. I don't have that. I'm sorry. I'll have to put that up on our homepage there. I just have the categories, the names, but we'll put a link there too, so you can sign up and put an invitation in.
Right. And what's interesting about it too is that this is not a DVR type system, and it's not an on-demand system.
Doesn't depend on a box.
Right. And so you can't, in a way, it's almost a little old-fashioned, because you're just getting access to these live channels the same as you would through a cable box.
Like a regular old TV used to be.
But I think what more people want now is to be able to watch stuff on demand. So I'm eager to see how this plays out, but I almost feel like this is almost a throwback, like kind of like this should have been happening 5 years ago.
Yes.
Right now, I want to get access to all the content that these channels offer on demand when I want it, and not just when it's live.
Well, the other thing is that I'd like a choice. So why should I stick with 9 items? Do I have the ability to order more in the future? Will I get the ability to do that?
I think TiVo is going to try to take advantage of this other thing called TiVo One Pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is tied in to their devices, the Romeo, Premiere, and Mini devices. And with that, I understand, you can go back, and you can do things on demand, but that's tied then to their devices.
Right, which TiVo, not a lot of people own TiVo boxes.
Right,
and it costs a fair amount.
So I want to get this straight. The Sling, this new Sling device, has a number of...
no device.
Not a device, it's a service.
Oh, it's just a service?
Just a service, right. You work with your Roku box or your tablet
whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's just what they call an on-top service.
So I was looking for like an app, but it's not an app. You have to go to their website, right? To sign up?
No, you are incorrect, sir.
Okay,
so it
is an app. It's something you'll sign up for, like you would for, say, Netflix, and you'll just access it through any of your existing devices.
So it's a streaming service.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm looking, and it's not showing up in the App Store.
Well, it's not out yet.
This month it's coming out this
patience,
month.
Gary,
that's why.
Patience.
Come on, I want it now. We're talking about
What's interesting about this
is the now generation.
The interesting thing about this is, because a lot of times at CES, you see stuff, think, that's really cool, and it never comes out.
Yeah.
In this case, it's coming out at the end of this month. It'll be out.
And it is potentially, sounds like it could be a cable cutting scenario.
There's a lot of cord cutting stuff that came out of CES, not just this.
Right.
There was a new the new Tableau over-the-air DVR which is also antenna-based. It has built-in antennas instead of having you to hook up your own antenna. So a lot of interesting things happening in the cord-cutting front, for sure.
Okay, let's talk about something I know that's near and dear to your heart. There's so much that came out of it. That's drones.
Yes, drones.
Was that big this year?
Oh, my God. If there was, I think that was probably one of the biggest things to come out, was just the sheer number of new models that were announced and demonstrated at CES. I mean, when I was there last year, there were a couple. This category has exploded.
I heard that they're expecting over 400,000, was it 400,000 purchases of drones this year, I believe.
And that would not surprise me at all. I think that's probably a low estimate.
We had Harry Arnold last week on from Detroit Drones, and some of the applications are just incredible.
It really
is. He's working with the fire department when they're fighting fire, and a lot of other things as well. It's happening.
Oh, stuff is so cool. And again, I do want to, I guess, caveat it that I think that there are some dangers that need to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I think it's just a matter of time before something unfortunate happens with somebody, you know, who pilots one of these things and doesn't know what they're doing. It goes out of control, out of range.
Well, I hope the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, gets off the stick and finally lays down some basic rules.
It really becomes a question of how do you implement and how do you enforce rules. But let's not talk about the negative. Let's talk about the positive.
How about the one that's on the wrist?
You clip it onto your wrist like a wristband, and then it just pops loose and it flies away.
And it takes a picture of you.
And it takes a selfie.
A drone selfie.
It's a Drelfie.
A Drelfie. A new category.
Trademark. Yeah, of course it is.
Eddie, something that's near and dear to your heart. We're going quickly on this. Reversible USB.
Oh, now that's cool. Now, why didn't I hear anything about this with the USB 3.0 standard? There's a 3.1, and apparently there's an A and a C, and one's the mini, and one's the what would look like the larger USB, but they're reversible.
Duh.
Duh, like the lightning adapter.
Yes.
Duh, it only took so long, but what are some of the other attributes of it? Because I could not believe.
Well, I think faster, certainly, is one big one. But just the fact that you don't have to now bend over and look at the port or the plug just to find out which way it goes in.
Every night when I go to bed, I have to plug my thing in. And how many people do I support in the corporation I work for where they hand you a cell phone and says it's stopped charging? Well, that's because you could tell they were plugging in the wrong way for the last 3 months.
Well, it's kind of interesting to see the process, because this new USB was approved in mid-2014. The universal,
USB Type-C, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, USB Type-C was approved, and there are now specifications for it. The thing I heard about it is that it's going to allow incredible throughput for power. Like, you'll be able to actually charge a laptop with something that has this connector to it.
Wow. You know, 100 watts, which is unprecedented. 100 watts that you'd be able to get out of the USB 3.1 standard. That is a lot. Compared to what we have now, I think is like 10 watts is the maximum you can. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you cannot charge an iPad through an existing computer for the most part. Mm-hmm. And some cell phones, because you have to use an AC adapter.
Through an existing Windows computer.
Yeah, Cal at home. I have trouble sometimes charging my iPhone and the laptop so much, but the iPad, because I don't get enough throughput on it.
So basically, coming down the line is going to be yet another USB standard that we're going to have to buy new adapters for our cell phones, basically.
I'm hanging on. If I were going to be getting a new laptop, I would be waiting a little bit to find these things on the devices. They're not on right now.
No. Not yet.
By late 2015.
Is that what we think?
I think so, yeah.
So go ahead
now.
And
to wait that long.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So go ahead and buy your laptop now, and buy another one in the end of the year.
Yeah, right. Okay, one more thing from there: the compute stick.
The compute stick. Yeah, interesting item from Intel is this thing called the compute stick, which is a $150 gizmo that looks like basically like a USB dongle, except that it's an HDMI dongle. So it's going to plug into your TV. It's going to basically turn your TV into a Windows 8.1 PC with a decent amount of power. Cool, but what do I want my TV to be a PC for? I haven't quite worked that out yet.
That's right.
Rick Broda, thank you so much. Our gadget guy, thanks so much for being with us here.
My pleasure.